This is Talk Is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, this week and next week, in two parts, Community Rights Lane County, Michelle Holman and Community Rights Lane County got their county watershed protection measure on the ballot. It's 2373, so we need you to vote yes on 2373 to get rights of nature in Lane County, and ultimately that could make clear-cutting illegal, because clear-cutting clearly destroys habitat and the environment. There is no way to do that without doing that. So, and the May Day celebration, April 26th, 8th and Oak, boycott Washington mushrooms. This Sunday is the Eugene Emergency Physicians meeting. You can go to healthcareforall.org and find out about what's going to happen with our Eugene Emergency Physicians. Let's see. I'm calling for a debt jubilee. I think we're going to need a debt jubilee here when the economy crashes from $200 barrel oil. And we still don't have an international force in Gaza to ensure that people get aid there, which they're not getting humanitarian aid there because we don't have an international UN force in Gaza. Iran seems to be in control, though.
The as of rights this taping. Of nature event.
Let's see what else. Shout out to radioforall.net.
2373.
That will make of Talk Is Cheap. Radioforall.net.
The Watershed Protection Act.
I just went to the anti-ice
in Lane County.
Symposium lecture from the Minnesota.
Thanks for listening,
ice
to your friends. Support independent
people.
Media.
And but we couldn't record that. But I'll be updating you on that all the time. I just want to say shout out to KLCC or NPR for finally reporting on Rojava. Now that Rojava has basically collapsed, Rojava, the autonomous zone in Rojava has basically collapsed. And this is my this is an example of what NPR does, is they report things when it's too late to do anything about it. So yeah, I'll try to update you, keep you updated on Rojava. They're a model of direct democracy that is spreading across the world, and that's what's going to save us, is direct democracy and mutual aid. Classless society is what we're all working on right now. So yeah, 2373 is the rights of nature. And you know, right away there's going to be the Lars Larson crowd is going to be opposed to making clear-cutting illegal. But, you know, the larger property that you own, the more responsibility you have to the community and the more impact on the community you have. So whether you're a capitalist or not, you still have obligations to your neighbors, Weyerhaeuser. And, you know, Weyerhaeuser, you've had a 100-year run of slaughtering the trees and decimating the forests. You've had 100 years. You should have diversified long ago. You're not being right to your shareholders by not diversifying. You should have moved on to hemp long ago. Can I suggest rooftop solar? Rooftop solar, Weyerhaeuser, move on to hemp. So yeah, you can also go to djsusd.org if you want to know more about me. djsusd.org. And again, thank you to radioforall.net. Thanks for supporting independent media.
We're going to have a great program tonight. Kunu Bertram, he is one of the chief petitioners for Measure 20-373. He is from the Ho-Chunk Nation in Northern Cheyenne, and he has been a great help to this initiative to get us qualified and on the ballot and ready to go. And he's going to talk about sort of what brought him into this struggle for water protection. So Kunu, where are you, Kunu? Come on down.
Hello, everyone. How y'all doing this evening? All right. Thank you for coming through. My name is Kunu Bertram. See a lot of familiar faces here. I'm Northern Cheyenne and Ho-Chunk Nation. I was born here, and now my son's here getting have family here. My wife's here. My in-laws are here. So many extended relatives, and it's an honor to be able to speak today and share my experiences on how I have come to be a chief petitioner for Measure 20-373. But before I share my story, I'd like to introduce some friends to help kind of set the scene here. And so tonight I have a really good friend, mentor, family member, Fish Martinez, and he's gonna be here to share some of his music. And he's a member of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians. And as well, I am going to be bringing up, 1 second here, Ashley Kyla Rose Hunt, who is the Lane Community College Native American Student Association co-chair. She is a U of O student, and she is also a member of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians. And I'm gonna ask her to come and do a land acknowledgement for us before we start this event tonight.
Chela Shahayam, Ashley Nike Yahal, Nika Tilhum, Kaba Siletz Ili'i, Siletz Shawash Ili'i, Mox, Dahlam Shloon Kool Nika. Hello, my name is Ashley. I'm a member of my people come from the Siletz tribe, and I'm 30 years old. I would like us to take a moment to honor and acknowledge that we are on the traditional homelands of the Kalapuya. There was a mass genocide of our tribal people, and there's been an ongoing forced removal from our tribal homelands. And this is something that we're still working to correct and fight for our tribal rights. It's an ongoing process. Just take a moment to honor that and recognize that these are the lands we stand on, and these are the people we're still here to represent and to honor our ancestors and continue to do things like this and fight for the rights of our land and our environment to protect our waters. That's something that is culturally significant and deeply rooted in our tribal communities, and something that we're continuing on that our ancestors have fought for a really long time. Hayumasi.
Thank you very much. In continuing with a kind of tribal protocol, I also would like to bring up Fish Martinez to share an honor song. And so for this, I'd like you to stand if you can, and also remove your hat.
Here it goes, something like this. You put your right foot, oh no, that's just kidding. That was a Native American song.
Oh,
fish. It's October 26th, 2016. The night is quiet and our senses are on high alert. Every passing car and brake light in the distance is suspect. My cousins and I have been driving nonstop from Portland, Oregon for about 19 hours now. Moments ago, we were laughing and nervously checking our GPS to see if we're still on the route. And we were. But the vibe had changed once we passed the first abandoned roadblock with razor wire. Our phones told us we were about 15 minutes from Cannonball, North Dakota, on the unceded lands of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. We were told that we couldn't drive from the city, so we had to take some back roads, and we wanted to make sure that we were doing that at night, so as to not be stopped and searched on the way. We were bringing jet stoves to the encampment there from a local jet stove producer here in Cottage Grove. I forget the name, but what is it? Appabacho. Yeah. So we were bringing jet stoves to our families there. We knew that winter was coming and that the camp, the people in the camp were gonna need them. We had arrived at the Sacred Stone Camp. There were tribal flags from nations all across Turtle Island that lined our arrival. This was the first sense of calm that we had experienced in the last few hours. On the morning of October 27th, a call went out to the whole camp. We need horse riders. Who can ride a horse? We need you at the front lines now. They're bulldozing our inipi, our sweat lodges, and we need riders now. Both my cousin Toby and I grew up riding horses, so we thought, oh dang, we could do that. But I was also coming with film equipment, and so I realized that we should probably hop in our car and drive to where we were needed at that time. And so we hopped in the car, and even though we were visitors at that camp, you know, we were ready to help out however we could. And in the confusion, we hopped into our vehicles and headed to the front lines. It was there that we were met with military contractor agents of Tiger Swan. These agents were armed with live ammunition and dressed to the nines. You can imagine they looked like stormtroopers from Star Wars. That's what we called them. Mm-hmm. And it was about a month prior that I had first heard the term water protector. It was on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. I felt an immediate sense of fellowship with the tribal people who were being described over the radio. And this is cliche to say, but it's something that I heard a few years ago by a speaker, and I'm forgetting the name right now, but it really made sense to me that so as Native people, we believe that we are the land defending itself, and we are the water protecting its essence. And I've heard that before growing up, but I didn't really understand it until I heard it explained this way. And so with that, you know, I want to ask everyone in this room, you know, how many generations do you have in America? You know, I mean, how many can you count? Four, five, two, seven, 12. So that's a lot of years. That's a lot of generations. The DNA of my friends from the Siletz tribe here, you know, they're mamas, 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 mamas. For, you know, the concept of time immemorial really becomes evident. And as I've grown older and attended many different types of funerals and births along the way, it really got me to thinking that, you know, like, yeah, like we go to the earth when we're done here. And so, you know, for indigenous people, we really are of the land and in the land and connected in a way that just, you know, it was profound. And so I say this also as a tribal member, as a tribal person who's not from these lands originally. So my Cheyenne people are from the Front Range of the Rockies and the Plains and the Woodlands area, as far as, you know, we can track back. And then my Ho-Chunk people were from the Woodlands, from what's now called Wisconsin, central Wisconsin area. But I was born here, and so I feel very connected to the land here. And the calling to water protection is something that I feel, you know, right down into my DNA, into my bones. And I'm going to share a backstory about my tribal people and how I feel this calling, right? thank you, United Methodist Church, for you know, for working with us with this measure and for hosting these events. When I think of the word, you know, calling and having a calling, I do think of religion and religious callings, religious folks. And so, you know, I feel the same way with water protection for, you know, for Native people. The forests, the, you know, that's our church, you know, the land, you know, where we come from. And so I feel like it's fitting to be here talking about a calling. So, as I said before, I'm Northern Cheyenne and Ho-Chunk. And on both sides of my ancestral lineage, I come from people who were forcibly removed from their homelands and that were marched hundreds of miles away, you know, with rifles to their, you know, pointed to their backs. This was a forced march. This was a forced migration. And this was the Indian problem being marched to open-air prisons called reservations, which were designed to slowly and cruelly kill their residents. Both the Northern Cheyenne and the Ho-Chunk people decided that they were not going to have the end of their story end up on a reservation. And on both the Northern Cheyenne and the Ho-Chunk people decided to break out of these reservations and head back to their homelands. And when I think of this, you know, I think of it as in a way of nature, like how a salmon heads upstream, or how monarch butterflies migrate to where their ancestors were, not knowing, you know, not living long enough to know exactly where that was, but they have some sort of a GPS inside of them that knows that this is where they need to go. And it's these movements and cycles in nature that I was raised with in this indigenous way of thinking. And as I've gotten older, I've realized that it's taken my whole lifetime to understand that this way of thinking is opposed to the capitalist system that we're living in, that we were born into. And this system of exploitation, as far as I know, as doing my little research here, was born in the 16th century during the European Renaissance from traders and businessmen who believed that the planet had infinite resources. We know that's not true. They also believed the Earth was flat. So, you know, we figured out a few things along the way. And so we're still living with this this capitalist system that leads our lives and the decisions we make about money. But this capitalist system, this process, it's diametrically opposed to these indigenous ways of thinking, of regenerative processes. It reminded me of like the way of, you know, Native people all across the planet, right? And you know, we all come from these different tribal ways of thinking. If we go far, you know, back enough, you know, there's always these petroglyphs and these images of spirals and thinking of time, you know, in spirals and circles, cyclical ways of thinking. And the corporate system that's out there is only thinking in one line straight ahead. And then the bits of time are the quarterly profits and losses, you know, and day trading, and, you know, and trying to amass as much wealth in the smallest amount of time, and using, you know, using all the resources they can to get there. So to bring this back to the this tribal way of thinking, has anyone here heard of the concept of seven generations? Okay, so with the concept of seven generations, we think about how we live our lives and how the actions we have today, how are they are going to affect our ancestors, our future generations, seven generations down the line, and thinking of, you know, the wisdom and what we've learned from our ancestors seven generations previous. And so for me, I believe that my calling to water protection is a continuation of my people's struggle to maintain and steward the land that our tribal people originate from here. There's this concept of needing to seek balance in the natural world. And I believe the work that we're doing with Measure 20-373, it's a small thing we can do, but it can the work that we can do here will echo into the future, you know, for our kids, for our grandbabies, and for, you know, these corporate entities that are gonna be coming for the water, right? You know, these data centers that we see popping up all over the country. We already see in Hood River, I don't know if it's Google or it's one of those data centers is looking to purchase one of the lakes up there, you know, that the people of Hood River depend on for their drinking water. And it's already happening all over the place, right? These corporate machines are coming in and they're taking the water and they're destroying it, and the local people don't see any benefits from these businesses coming in. And so I believe we've already here had a few, there's been talk that, you know, someone wants to put a data center here as well. So if this measure is in place, you know, we have legal defense against, you know, this happening to our resources. I'm going to bring Michelle Holman up here to help me deliver like the nuts and bolts of Measure 20-373.
We do this work. We don't know, we can't see the future. We don't have a crystal ball. We do this work because we have to do this work. That's why Kunu's here. That's why I stepped up to be a chief petitioner, to get a law on the books, to challenge unjust corporate practices that harm us and the watersheds. It's up to us. We're the people right here in this room. You can look to the left, you can look to the right, but it's right here. All of us have a calling to protect the earth. We are the earth defenders. We wrote this law because we feel like nature has to, nature's rights have to be elevated. We wrote this law because we care about the natural world, we care about each other, and we want to honor those who have been harmed already and are continuing to be harmed by harmful corporate practices that lack respect for the natural world that sustains us. We are only here by the grace of the natural world. We know that the harm is ever-present and growing. It's a steamroller. And without it being checked by people like us, it's limitless where it will go, off the edge of the cliff. Some of our detractors and the opposition likes to say that this law is too broad, that it could have unintended consequences. How about reality right here and now? What about the consequences that we are living with right now? We know that cancer's on the rise. We know that neurodegenerative diseases are on the rise. This is not folly. This is reality. This is what we live with. And we are the frogs in the water. It's turning up, turning up, turning up. Everyone in this room knows somebody who's suffering from some kind of health problem. And it can be traced back to nature's inability to fight for itself. So this puts nature actually elevated and into a court of law when it's harmed. Measure 2373 recognizes the rights of the watershed to exist, persist, naturally evolve, and flourish. When nature can do that, so can we. This also will, yeah. So it also requires that we, the people, and all the living creatures have clean water. That's a right. That would be a right that would be ensconced in this law. And it would be done by curtailing harmful corporate and government practices. Yeah, we're talking about change. We're talking about big change. We want to shake the blanket here. The status quo isn't working for us. And yeah, maybe there are unintended consequences. Well, necessity is the mother of all invention. We're smart. If we have to stop using toxic chemicals to kill off plants, plant life, well, we'll figure something else out, right? I mean, it's possible. The chemical companies benefit, the big corporations benefit at our expense. So at this point, we're expressing our responsibility and our obligation to the land, to the precious planet we live on. A couple things you can do. We have those QR codes all over. I always like to say, I hope you enjoy a really healthy relationship with your devices, but we are going to ask you to get onto social media. It's 2026, folks, and that's how you run a campaign. So please get yourself on our QR codes, follow, like, and share our Instagram and our Facebook posts. You can also please, please, please donate. As Rob said, we are an all-volunteer organization. None of us gets a dollar doing this work. Why do we do this? We want to do this. We're required to do this. So we need some funds because these things cost money. We're getting lawn signs and door knockers or door hangers. Door knockers.
We'll be knocking.
Yeah, we are the door knockers. And then we are amassing our ground campaign, our field campaign, and that would be you folks right here, and all your neighbors and your family. We need people to get out on the streets because we don't have the big bucks to get a billboard. We don't have the big bucks to get ads in the paper and on TV. We have to do this ourselves. This is a grassroots campaign, and there is such honor in that. This is not about money. This is just about the power of the people. We can do this shit, you folks. We can do this. So we want you to join us. There's sign-up sheets on the table. If you can get a yard sign and put it in your yard, that would be great. Just consider that this is your time to step up. There's a lot going on in the world. There's plenty of causes to be involved in, and some of us are doing more than one. I can see people in the room I know that are doing more than one issue right now. But this is the one we're asking you to get involved in right here and now, May 19th. We have a choice. We can join the 670 other communities that have passed these nature protective laws in 60 nations, 170 right here in the U.S. Why not Lane County?
One more time for Michelle Holman, please. Why not Lane County?
You're listening to the Rights of Nature event supporting Measure 2373 on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio.
I'm going to bring up Fish Martinez next here to share some music with y'all. He's a hip-hop artist. Once again, Celeste tribal member, family to me, mentor in this music thing. And from this point on, we're just going to be...
I think this is the part where we do the, you put your right foot in, you put, no, it's not. Still not, I'm trying, all right. Yeah, so my name is Fish Martinez. On my mom's side of the family, I'm from here in the Northwest. I'm Shasta Costa, Tututni, Modoc, and Yurok, as well as part German. And on my father's side of the family, I'm from the Southwest. And I am Mescalero Apache. And then further down in Mexico, in an area called Michoacan, some people know it as Teca. I'm learning more about it as it's Mestizo. But I'm from that region of my ancestors, or from that region. And so the whole thing with clean water, it's really important for me, and the reason I wrote this song called Water is Life is because I have a great aunt who's passed away, but she's really well known throughout the entire world. Her name is Agnes Pilgrim, and she was a woman who did many things. Truck driver, you know, she was a bouncer. She did all this crazy, wild, awesome stuff in life. She had a full, rich life. But what one point in her life, there was, I want to say it was the 13 grandmothers. And so there was 13 grandmothers from all different parts of United States and all the parts of everywhere in the whole entire world, right? From New Zealand to all these places. And she got these elders and they came together to talk about protecting Mother Earth and protecting the water, having clean water, and what that meant to them from their communities, from their homelands, from their tribes, from their ways of living, to share that and come together. And so I've been able to participate in salmon ceremonies and also been asked to be somebody who stands up for our water. And so be asked to come down here and share the song that I wrote was also, takes me back to when Kunu was just up here talking. I know he said he got really nervous, but it was real good medicine to hear him talk about his experience when he traveled to go support the folks, you know, in the Dakotas, because that was what inspired this song for me too, was also all the things that I had experienced, you know, up to that point in my life and wanting to reach out and help. So go ahead and push play and we'll see what happens. Water is life. It's not to be sold, a blessing to behold. Water is life. Heal the abuse from the elders to the youth. Water is life. Protect their access in waterways. Drip, drop, and evaporate. Splish, splash, now I'm wide awake. You can crush it or slush it. Contact for the map with an icy glass, solid state, or wait for the snowflake. Beautify the landscape as it falls, the roads and shapes. Sip or drink, boil with, make medicine with, dilute or cleanse. Spend the weekend in it with friends. See straight through and feel the force, typhoon or rip tides. Recreate or seek to survive worldwide. I'm about the proper alkaline. Redirect or divide, yo. Respect the flow. Yeah. Water is life. Check this out. Stop that drastic pesticidal leak and plastic containment. No more fluoridation. Sweat it out.
know the healing routes, purify and give thanks for the blessings. Yo, life cycle, so we recycle. Water spouts and bubbles up and drops knowledge from the clouds. Learn the lessons, no doubt. Good looking now, protectors, not protesters. Passionate activists, warriors in the game. It's what you claim, all about the front lines. Without the fame, purse up, chill out, and hold it down. From yourselves to this universe. Truth hurts, monopoly property. Water works, water works. Help protect Lake County watersheds. Check out that little googly whatever thing you call it. I don't know what you call it, but your phones, right? Water is life. Yo, check it out. Conscious as a water drop. I'm alarmed with a modal's mind through the power of prayer. Bringing molecular change. Water crystals don't have to stay polluted, united. That's how we do it with the hashtag No Dabble, for example. Stand up and demand the corrupt stop raping our lands. What's up? $1 billion schemes manipulate manifest destinations to control, dig holes, and act like they don't mind. Illusionists with a twist. Why don't you put them on the terrorist list? I'm about to head to North Dakota to up the quota. Pull over, I gotta taste some of that Nestle free straight from the spring. Stop any government that tries to lie, separate and divide, yo. Water's life. It's not to be sold, a lesson to behold. Water is life. Heal the abuse from the elders to the youth. Water is life. Protect our access and waterways. Thank you very much. I will just give a real quick acknowledgement to a friend of mine from, oh, he's trying to get me to do another song. I was ready. But that's okay, that's for next time. There's a gentleman from California, he goes by Rick Rockard, he's a producer of music. And when he sent me the beat, I was like, oh, this is awesome, I love it, I can't wait, what am I gonna do with this? And then of course, we were, Kunu and I were both living in Portland at the time, and I used to teach preschool, among many other things. And at the time I was teaching preschool, and at the end of the day, we would go outside and I'd meet with the families and we would talk while the kids finished playing, got their last little bit of, you know, hanging out with their friends. And that was when I learned that, because see, I'm also from the city of Eugene. This is my hometown also. So it's always an honor and a pleasure to be asked to come back into the community and to support it. And so I found out that the mother, she said, oh yeah, I used to go to Eugene. I went to this different school though. And I was like, different school? Well, I went to a different school too. What school did you go to? Turned out we both went to the same different school, which was here in the community, was Magnet Arts. So I went to Magnet Arts School when it was on campus on the building that's now part of the university, Condon School or Condon Hall. So I went to it there, and then when it moved over to the Jefferson over by Westmoreland area, I went to it there as well. And so I just shared that because it turned out that her and I knew all the same people. Well, you know, Kathy and Gwen and Carol and Carolyn and Fred, this is how we knew the teachers from our school. We got to use the first name basis with them and we grew. And it turned out that she is this amazing jazz vocalist, and her name is Jessie Marquez.
Yeah.
And Jessie, I was teaching her daughter Chloe was in my preschool classroom. And then so then I got to know her. And then she's like, oh, and my husband. And then Clay Guyverson, he is this amazing pianist and was teaching piano at the time at the Mount Hood Community College. But he's also of the jazz community. And I started, my brain started going, and there was a gentleman who plays trumpet, his name is Farnell Newton. And he had been playing with some of the like really awesome and talented hip hop musicians in the Portland area. And so this was my chance. And I was like, you know, Jesse, Clay, what would you think about? Would there be a chance to like maybe, you know, create some music and do something together? And they're like, yeah, that sounds great. And I was like, you don't know Farnell? They go, Farnell! And I said, and then it just fell all into place. So when you listen to that song and there's that trumpet in there, that's from Farnell. and Jesse is singing the harmonies, and then Clay is doing all the different elements of the keyboard and the song. So I just wanted to share that with all of you. Thank you very much.
The song?
Yeah,
It's on like YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, all that.
Oh, the song?
Yeah.
Yeah, for 1995. No, I'm just joking. So I've been doing music since 1993, and I go by the name of 2-8 the Native. The 2 and the 8 are significant for me because of the numbers that they represented and how they would be coming into my life up to that point. And then the Native, well, I'm an educator. I mentioned that before. I've been teaching for over 35 plus years working with youth. I've been an infant, Walbert, toddler, preschool, Head Start teacher, and then I've also done K through 12 and a little bit of college. And the I had to misspell, okay? It's hip hop, so it's T-H-A. And then Native, I'm not sure why I did that, but we'll just figure that out for yourself. And yeah, my music is like on any musical platform that probably more than I'm even aware of.
And so, the song is called Water is Life?
Well, it's called Water is Life featuring Farnell Newton. Yeah, you can check that out. And I've actually had the opportunity just a few years ago with my uncle Brent Florendo. We came here to the community and we performed with the Eugene Choir. So it was a 100-person choir. And we got to perform for the Music of America's performance at the Holt Center, which was quite the honor. Yeah. And I performed this song, not only for you guys here today, but I performed this with the PJCE, which is the Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, which is a 12-piece jazz band from the Portland community. So it's 12 pieces, all horns, wind instruments, and then plus the pianist and drummer. And then there's also this small little group called the Portland Chamber Orchestra. And I got to perform with them 4 times, like a 50-piece full orchestra under, rest his spirit, Yaki Bergman was the conductor from New York who I got to work with. So this song continues to change and evolve. I'm actually going next week to Portland, and I'm gonna be working with a woman named Andrea Gonzalez and her husband. She's a celloist, and we're gonna try to do maybe like some type of acoustic set with this. So it's always just an opportunity and an exploration, and I really, really hope that beyond my music, that if anything, if you listen to it, it inspires you to help support this bill, this 2373, and the rest of your community. I hope it empowers you to do these things because it is important. We are protectors, and that's what we do. No matter where you're from, right, we're all human beings. And I hear it often said, oh, in the two worlds, and these two, if the world goes to crap, we're all from the same world. It's going to impact us all. So it's important for all of us as human beings to connect with one another, to support one another.
This is March 8th, 2026, March 7th, March 8th of Financial Times. So what this is about a shipper. This guy will, you know, he's just like out of the movies. He'll just ship anything, weapons, oil. He doesn't care as long as you pay him. He'll get those weapons and that oil out of there no matter how many people die because of his actions or whatever, you know. And so this guy's just hilarious. And you'll hear everything that you've been hearing on the news is all included in here. So Buccaneer risking his ships and crews in Strait of Hormuz. And you'll notice, we don't know whether he pays his crew members. In this day and age, people are so desperate for jobs that we're wondering, me and the Financial Times here, are wondering if he actually, the extra money that he gets to ship this stuff, does he give it to his crew, or does he just send them to their death, you know, and keep the money for himself? So we're not sure about that. But, you know, he has the right to do whatever he wants with the ocean and his ship. So this is Buccaneer risking his ships and crews in Strait of Hormuz. His name is George Procopio, shipping magnate, Jamie John, Malcolm Moore, and Nassos Stylianou. So, Financial Times from March 8th. As Iranian missiles streaked over the Strait of Hormuz last Sunday, bringing traffic across one of the world's most vital trade routes to a near halt, one Greek billionaire was steering his ship straight into the turmoil. Dynacom Tankers, owned by 79-year-old George Procopiou, has sent at least five tankers through the narrow waterway at the mouth of the Gulf since the outbreak of war with Iran on Saturday, making it one of a handful of legal operators willing to brave the journey. Most owners have paused transit until things calm down, said one shipbroker. But there are a few buccaneers willing to take the risk. There are big rewards on offer. Freight rates for tankers leaving the Gulf have more than doubled, hitting record highs. A single so-called VLCC, or Very Large Crude Carrier, tanker making the perilous voyage across the strait and on to China will earn about $500,000 in revenue per day, excluding the cost of additional war risk insurance, according to price reporting agency Argus. While the risks for the owners are money and tankers, the sailors on board are putting their lives on the line. Iran has threatened to set any ships attempting to cross the passage, quote, on fire, hitting at least nine since the conflict began, with at least three seafarers killed. All of Dynacom's vessels turned off their transponders, devices that automatically transmit a vessel's location and identity, for their passage through the strait. Ship tracking data shows Dynacom's crude tanker Athena, which was in the region before the attacks, stopped transmitting early on Saturday evening, southeast of the waterway, before reappearing the following afternoon in the Gulf. The unladen vessel, which reached Bahrain's Sitra port on Monday and departed 2 days later with a cargo of oil. Born into a wealthy family in Athens in 1946, Procopiou is among the latest generation of Greek ship owners who have long dominated the maritime trade. Described by a person close to him as unassuming and a workaholic, he is rarely seen without his trademark baseball cap, drives an old Mercedes SUV, and walks around without security, a rarity among Greece's ship-owning elite. Procopiou spends most of the year on his mega-yacht, the 106.5-meter Dream, currently docked on the Athenian Riviera, and his expansive property portfolio has earned him the nickname the King of Real Estate in his home country. Last year, he bought a stake in the Four Seasons Astir Palace, the luxury hotel group's only Greek property, along with the adjoining Volegmeni Marina, which primarily serves mega yachts. After buying his first ship in his mid-20s, Procopiou built a huge fleet around the world, along with a reputation for taking risks. The Greek tycoon's three shipping companies have more than 150 vessels on the water, with roughly 85 more under construction, said a person familiar with the matter. He's an industry legend, and one of those people that does what we call premium business, said one shipbroker who has worked with Procopiou's companies, using a euphemism for trades that are legal but carry much higher risks. Procopiou's Dynacom tankers has moved tens of millions of barrels of Russian crude oil over the past year, and is one of the biggest lifters of the cargo since Moscow launched its assault on Ukraine in early 2022, according to Financial Times analysis of Kepler data and ship ownership records. The billionaire stirred controversy in 2022 when, months after the outbreak of the war, he said that sanctions have never worked, although there is no suggestion he has ever breached them. Ukraine's National Agency on Corruption Prevention put Dynacom Tankers on its list of international sponsors of war for its role shipping Russian crude, accusing it of replenishing the budget of the aggressor country in financing the Russian invasion. However, in 2023, it withdrew Dynacom from the list, and in 2024 withdrew the list altogether, following pressure from its overseas partners. Procopiou had always acted within the law, the shipbroker said, and had complied with price caps and other Russian crude restrictions. But he added The billionaire's willingness to shift cargo that others might not was where he's made most of his margin. The International Transport Workers Federation, which represents crew members, has mandated bonus payments for those operating around the Strait of Hormuz since Monday that are meant to enforce a doubling of both salaries and death and disability benefits. Crew members can also refuse to sail with repatriation at company's cost and compensation equal to 2 months' basic wage. Okay, so the government is mandating that, but are they enforcing it? We don't know. Procopio and Dynacom Tankers did not respond to a request for comment, including on whether they were making the additional payments to its crews. He represents a certain way of doing business. He represents a certain way of doing business, said Ed Finley. I'm sorry, this is just black comedy to me. I'm sorry. He represents a certain way of doing business, said Ed Finley Richardson, a shipping investor and founder of Contango Research. He's one of a cohort of 5 to 10 owners who really overshadow everyone else, not because of the size of their fleet, but also because they are willing to act boldly. Procopio has a reputation for honoring his contracts where others renege, but sending his ships through the strait while live fire continues on both sides represented a historic opportunity for the Greek billionaire, said Finley Richardson. He noted the risk of entering the Gulf with an empty ship was lower, and once there, quote, you are in the negotiating position to ask for the right price for the clear and present danger to your vessel and the crew and everything else. It's during these periods that the truly elite ship owners tend to distinguish themselves, he added, pointing to Greek tycoon Aristotle Onassis' willingness to risk German U-boat attacks in the Second World War and Norwegian magnate John Fredriksen's move to buy up contracts to ship oil by tanker during the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Charming. Is that a shipping? Do you think maybe that's a keystone in the globalization world? But please don't kill any multinational heads of multinational corporations or shipping people. Please don't do that just because someone read an article on the radio. Summing up his approach in 2014, Procopio said, if you are not a risk taker, you are not in shipping. If you don't want the risks, you buy U.S. bonds, which is a lot to be said for U.S. bonds right now. So, that's from Financial Times. I think that kind of sums up what's going on right now. There's a May Day celebration at the Park Blocks on 8th and Oak, April 26th. May Day celebration, April 26th. Park Blocks on 8th and Oak. Should be a hoot with all of your favorite organizations and some that you might have never heard of that you should be involved in. So that's very important to be at the May Day celebration for networking on April 26th, 2026, at the Park Blocks, 28th and Oak. And yes, oil shocks hopefully will move us closer to energy independence with rooftop solar, rooftop solar, rooftop solar. I'm hoping if I say it enough times, the Google algorithm will pick it up and just make it happen.
For KEPW News, I'm DJ Sus D.